Massive thanks to listening to this recording of a panel discussion focused on the retail sector. Panelists include Alex Schlagman of Save the High Street, Karen Bennett from Lendwell, Peter Hingebottom from Planning Insight, Susie Carter from Strong Oak Investments, and Ranjan Bhattacharya. So do enjoy the panel chaired by Aaron Yehara. If you wish to join these events live, they take place on Monday mornings from 9:40 a.m. Thank you.
Okay, so there we go. I noticed a couple of questions are missing, Brendan, but that's for another day. Okay, so I want to say welcome everyone who's joining us. Welcome to the Monday. This is Brendan's Property Brunch. We've been running this every single Monday through the situation. I'm running out of words to use. And we've just got loads of insights and expert opinion and discussions and friendships. And this Monday will be no different. We're discussing the future of the high street, expanded to the future of retail, or actually just the future, full stop. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined by a slew of panelists bringing their own industry insights to where things are going. So this is the way it's going to work to all the panelists. I'm going to go through you in order. The very first question, I'm just going to ask you to have a brief introduction about yourself and just your experience, just to give people a flavor if they're encountering you for the very first time. And we're going to be going in alphabetical order. So Ranjan, this is no time to flee. Welcome back. So Alex.
Aaron, can you hear me okay?
Good morning, Alex. Welcome. So please introduce yourself.
My name's Alex Schlagman. For those that don't know me, I'm one of the founding partners of SaveTheHighStreet.org. It's the industry movement. We're on a mission to ensure the success of UK high streets, both now and for the long term, running a whole series of programs in partnership with the businesses, the tenants themselves, local community champions, ranging from trade associations to business improvement districts, to just people that care about the success of their high streets, up to local authorities, local enterprise partnerships, growth hubs, government departments, media owners, journalists, property developers, landlords, investors, everyone who has a sort of vested interest and general interest in the success of High Street can join SaveTheHighStreet.org and play a role. And ultimately, the more of us that do, the stronger we will become.
Thank you so much, Alex. So one thing I didn't warn you is, as you go through, if you just have your contact details ready, so you can post them in the box, and that will prevent a lot of the questions that we get a little bit later. So thank you very much. The next person we're going to have is Karen Bennett from Lendwell. So Karen, are you there?
I am. Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. So to tell you a little bit about myself, my name's Karen Bennett. I am one of the founding partners of Lendwell. I know Daryl attends a lot of, or all of Brendan's events, and is a very popular figure. And for myself and my background, I was the managing director of the property division of Shawbrook Bank. So I worked within that business from the inception of Shawbrook all the way through, took it through an IPO and then bringing it back private again. So have 20 years plus experience in commercial specialist buy to let, bridging and development. I've also got a couple of projects of my own ongoing now. Now I'm not in the corporate environment. I've got a bit of time to actually run some schemes myself, including my own home, which is fun through lockdown. I'm an all-round problem solver, really. I like to be able to make people's lives easier. So from a lending perspective, we're very focused on trying to make funding a little bit easier for everybody wanting to borrow money to achieve their goals.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Karen. And the next person I have is Peter Hingebottom.
Hi, everyone hear me?
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
Hi, I'm Peter Hingebottom. I'm Managing Director of Planning Insight. We're a specialist town planning consultancy. We've been going for over 10 years, based in central London, focus predominantly in London and the southeast on a mixture of residential and mixed-use schemes. We've done a lot of work on the high street over the years, changes of use in terms of commercial changes as well as to residential. My background is large-scale schemes, including infrastructure. I was talking earlier about HS2 that I've been involved in for the past 2 to 3 years, delivering a massive consent for a new station in Birmingham. But our experience is very, very broad. We focus on giving honest advice to our clients. We'd rather tell you not to proceed with something, even if it means we don't get instruction. That's one of our key values. And we also bespoke our advice to and provide strategies so you can that align with your aspirations. So if a quick consent's needed, we can provide that strategy for that and reduce risk. Or if you want to maximise a site, then we can happily provide a long-term strategy with multiple stages.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that comprehensive introduction. The next person who needs a little introduction is Mr. Ranjan Bhattacharya. Ranjan? Ranjan, you're muted, which for a TikTok star, I expect more. So Ranjan, please.
Please don't mention that. My name is Ranjan Bhattacharya. I've been investing in property for about 30 years now, since 1990. Commercial property since about 2001. Been doing a lot of commercial property, in particular on the high street, also offices, but with a view to repurposing. There's a massive oversupply of both retail and office space in the UK. That has now even more come to a head as a result of this COVID-19 crisis. The trends that were already playing out are just being accelerated. We're going to see even more oversupply over the next year or two. And my bag is how that basically prices are going to be good. Prices are going to be very keen. Not all properties and not all areas are going to be savable and repurposable, but some are. And it's a worth laser focusing on the ones that are worth repurposing, figuring out how to actually repurpose them. I'm not just talking about repurposing to residential usage, but also repurposing to other commercial usages, and particular property types. Not all retail properties are savable. Some are, many are, and not all locations are salvageable either. So my bag is Ranjan, really about figuring out what you can repurpose and how to do it.
Ranjan, I was going to say, hold some of your ammunition. This was just the introduction.
Okay, can I just do a quick, I've just put a plug for my YouTube. I do a bit of YouTube, okay. Got about 18,000 subscribers, do a lot of videos on commercial property and repurposing, new stuff every week. So I've just put the subscription link and some of the popular commercial property videos in the chat.
Okay, so thank you very much for that introduction, Ranjan. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more, and also to go a little bit deeper into some of the topics that you'll doubtly bring up. And the last person I'm going to call on to introduce themselves is Susie Carter. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Susie Carter. I have a background in commercial property. I'm a child surveyor. I've worked in the corporate world for many, many years. I've worked for a retailer. I acquired large sites for B&Q for many years. I worked at CBRE on Regent Street. And latterly, I worked at Landsec, the UK's largest, or they were at that time, real estate investment trust, managing a large portfolio of shopping centres. I now am a property investor, invest in residential and commercial property. I still do consultancy in the commercial world, and I'm just about to launch some commercial property training. So I'll put the link in the chat if that's okay, Ellen.
Fantastic. So thank you very much for all the panelists. As you can tell, we have a range of experience. I'm expecting fireworks. And although when I normally say that, all the panelists just end up agreeing with each other and all the hype just goes in. So please, I want to encourage you to fill in the survey if you haven't and to come with the questions. And for this next thing, just to give the panelists some breathing space and some thinking space, I'm going to ask you the following questions. I'm going to ask you, first of all, just to give a state of play. Just where are we now? Without any further assessment of the solutions and what happens next, just a state of play, as in where are we now, frozen in time. Then I'm going to go on to saying, based on that other question, what happens next? And the link into that will be opportunities. So I will also tell you in advance the order in which I'm going to go through, so you can take notes and know. So for this one, I'm going to start with Peter. Then I'm going to go on to Karen. Then I'm going to go to Ranjan. Then Alex. Then Susie. And for this round. And so, Peter, what is the current state of play?
State of play. In planning in general, it's business as usual. Those that get involved in the planning process will know that's not a great thing because it's pretty slow at the best of times. Council's under-resourced. And the sort of COVID and lockdown issues have not helped that situation. But planning system's still running. Committee meetings are remote. Validation's happening. So keep going. It will get there. To some extent, I think extra resources will probably find its way to planning departments after this. In terms of the high street, sort of commercial aspects at the moment, we all know that the situation on the high street was pretty poor in a number of places before this. This is only going to make it worse. The problem is that planning policies and planning position is pretty restrictive. There's still an obsession with keeping magic numbers of a percentage of A1 retail in high streets. That needs to be challenged. That's going to impede development, impede investment. So that's kind of where we are at the moment.
Fantastic. So the next person I'll be asking to comment on there, so Peter, just taking it in, is at the moment planning is business as usual, which might mean a lot of things, which I'm sure Karen is going to expand on in terms of what she's finding. So to all the panelists, please take notes, and you're welcome to revisit anything that's been said to expand upon. So Karen?
Where we are with funding retail at the moment is it's incredibly challenging. We've just got to a stage where valuers are going back out to premises to actually go in and inspect to be able to give value so that you can even gather the funding. But lenders in general and funders in general are incredibly nervous around the retail sector and how it's going to recover following the COVID challenge. So I do think that it was a challenging sector anyway, and we've seen it declining over the last few years. And it really is just around how people are using and looking at that situation. So businesses that previously have worked very well within retail space, are they looking at multi-channels? You know, do they have websites? Do they sell on social media? Can you buy us on your mobile phone? You need all of those things available nowadays to make a business work. So it's just looking through all of those things. Funding with regards to converting retail premises, though, is still available and is something that is quite popular. So converting either as a whole into residential security or in part. So there's a kind of new trend that we've started to see where you've got a little bit more of a pop-up shop at the start, at the front of the shop, at the bottom. And then behind that, you've got either offices and then upstairs a flat, or even a flat behind the shop and upstairs. So you are seeing more there. But again, loan to values are restricted in the current market, while lenders, even on a buy to let, you're kind of struggling to get over the 75% mark. So on retail and commercial, it's, you know, you're looking at 65%, maybe even 60%, 55%. So challenging market. Sam can tell you a little bit more around all the different lenders and what they're doing there.
Okay, so thank you very much for that, Karen. It was almost like that was a perfect lead in to Ranjan. And so Ranjan, which one of those cherries do you want to pick?
I think I'm going to tackle the current state of play from the landlord's perspective and a little bit about the opportunity. Commercial landlords are in a very interesting space in that they've been given no help from the government. There's no requirement on commercial lenders to give a mortgage deferment, but they have given commercial tenants a lot of help with business rates grants for every store they have. So if you've got, 40 stores or whatever, you can claim 20 grand as a grant, free money per store, up to a maximum of something like £800,000 per company. So there's a lot of money that's been swilled at the tenants. There's no help for the commercial landlords, but there's also a moratorium, a 3-month moratorium on landlords taking any enforcement or collections action on their commercial tenants. So as a result, commercial rent collections last quarter were dismal. Knight Frank did a survey. They said about 20% odd had been collected. And it really depends on who your tenant base is. Our collections were very high, approaching 70%. That's because of a lot of our tenants are not the big companies. They're mostly the mom and pop guys who have given personal guarantees and things. So they tend to be less playing the system. The large companies have typically sent us letters saying, give us a rent-free period. You know, some people have asked for, some big names have asked for 1 year's rent-free. And I think the big challenge for the landlord is that if they have a portfolio of properties which aren't repurposable, then they are in a weak position. The only real estate we have bought are ones which are repurposable. So our position is very strong. We respond to standard letters big companies have sent out saying, basically, F off. You know, as soon as the moratorium is up, you go. Because our properties are repurposable into residential, because that's why we bought them. So they're worth more vacant than with them in. So landlords who cannot play that game of repurposable properties are in a weak position. Typically, those are, you know, the large shopping centres, for example. It's very difficult to repurpose an into a shopping centre, hence their share prices just collapsed because of their issues. Also, large former department stores, if you imagine, you know, the size of a Debenham store, for example, it's not easily repurposable. But a lot of the smaller shops on secondary parades and that are very, very easy to repurpose. So a lot of the strength of a landlord's portfolio is ultimately going to be determined on what alternatives he or she has to repurpose those buildings for alternative uses. If it, a weak portfolio will be determined by low capital value areas, because unfortunately there are many areas up north, and I keep on banging on about up north, but there are a lot of areas up north where although planning and permitted development allows you to repurpose those retail real estate, you can't because it's not viable. If a flat won't sell for more than 40 grand, there's no point spending 50 grand to convert it. And there are many areas like that, and I don't really have a solution for those sort of areas. But there are plenty of areas where we'd have a bit more prosperity. And I feel my rough rule of thumb is if you are dealing with, if you're looking to repurpose property, look for areas where the average house price is at or above the national house price average. So you're pretty much looking at about, you know, the average house price needs to be in the 200 grand mark before it's actually worth the cost of repurposing, as a very rough rule of thumb. Areas which are less than that, it's difficult to repurpose and save those sort of units. So going back to where we are now, we're heading for the next quarter's rent collection. I think a lot of commercial landlords are looking out to see whether the government makes any extension to the moratorium that they gave last time of 3 months before landlords can collect. They have extended things like buy-to-let and domestic mortgages, payment holiday for 3 months and that kind of thing. What most commercial, well, if they renew that moratorium, what is likely to play out again is the larger companies will be playing silly games and more smaller landlords will be coming under a lot of pressure. And that is going to see a lot of commercial property coming onto the market. That's what we're going to see, a huge amount of commercial property come onto the market from landlords who are coming into cash flow difficulties, from businesses that don't want to come back, for businesses which don't want to come back with the same number of stores. I mean, Boots announced they're coming back out of lockdown, but they're shutting 61 of their least profitable stores. Other big chains are doing something similar. So we're going to see more stock over the next year coming onto the market than they are buyers. And that's going to see depressed prices, but people will have to know what to pick from all those opportunities that are out there, because only some premises are going to be profitable to repurpose.
Very much for that, Ranjan. I actually feel that we can probably just go home now because everything's in there. It was very comprehensive. And the person I'm going to call on next, what I'm actually going to do is just to make sure that you can actually roam a bit in your questions to get these things answered. We're actually looking at what the state of play is and what it's going to be, and linked into that, the opportunities and the changes. So the person to answer some of those questions is actually going to be Alex, who I'm going to call on next. So I am asking for the state of play, but Ranjan did say a couple of things, which was in regards to the conversations you're having right now with landlords and how some of those have changed and as this has gone on. So Alex, please, your comment on combining these two.
Yeah, I mean, big question. So I'll probably start at a kind of higher level and then we'll see if we sort of build downwards. I don't know if you, how long you've got for me for this question, but it's a big one we could probably talk about for an hour or so just on its own.
Please don't do that.
No, we're not. That's not appropriate. I also don't have an hour, so I think it's going to happen. Okay, so COVID-19 hits. It's an accelerator immediately for a lot of the things that were already going on the high street. So last decade or so has been the most transformational period in the history of high streets, but yet the last 2 months has completely accelerated that again. Footfall's clearly dropped off a cliff. Government have jumped in and provided all kinds of support, as Ranjan just talked about, you know, the 10,000 or 25,000, depending on rateable value for the individual tenants. If they're under 51,000, and business rates gone for the tenants who are over 51,000, and you know the landlord still has to pick up business rates for vacant units after a period, but you know actually none of the tenants now for this period ahead are paying business rates, and a whole bunch of other stimulus packages that are either here or coming as well. So government sort of stepped in and done their bit. Now, the other side of what's been going on here, sort of talking more broadly about some of the dynamics happening on the high streets, we've started to need to move towards high streets which are firstly more intelligent, where every single high street has a plan. And if you look at a lot of high streets today, you know, they're not massively well planned. They haven't got a very considered tenant mix. There isn't very good collaboration going on between public and private sector around what needs to happen to make this high street either regenerate or just achieve its current goals. And in a lot of cases, high streets don't have very clear roles. So, you know, building on some of the stuff Ranjan's talked about, which I know Brendan and Aaron probably wanted fireworks on, there's a lot of agreement there, you know. There is a lot of high streets which today haven't got a very clearly defined purpose, in some cases have way too much retail. And actually the most fundamental thing we need to think about is actually look at every single high street and make sure we understand what's the role of this high street and as a town center, you know, as a center in its own right, what's the right mix of businesses to have to serve this local community today? And what is the right mix of commercial uses, retail uses and residential use? So, you know, I think there's a piece here firstly around intelligence, and building on that, one of the big accelerators here is that every single tenant in your portfolio, if you have retailers in your portfolio, now needs a new plan, because the reality is, you know, the world has changed beyond recognition. Nobody planned this, but every business on the high street now needs to have a plan to reduce their costs, sell in new ways, adapt their marketing, collaborate in different ways with their community, prepare for the future, whatever that future might be, and finance their business. And these are all things that, you know, whether you're an entrepreneurial high street business today and you're already actively working on your business every month, or whether you were just working in your business and just getting by, everybody now needs a new plan. So that's the first thing. And we're going to need a lot of data to really understand, to enable this. What is the right role? What's the right brand? What's the right tenant mix? And what is the potential of every single one of those units on that high street? Second key thing that's just is accelerating here is we need a lot more collaboration going on. And the reality is the commercial model between landlord and tenant, you know, was breaking prior to COVID-19 in terms of the high streets. A lot of the sort of pressure, if you look at the big shopping centers and a lot of the big tenants that are pushing onto landlords, was moving towards turnover-led rents, which had their challenges. And where we need to get to is a world where actually taking on some risk and getting some reward on the upside works for everybody, because that's what the future looks like. And if we can make that work, there's huge opportunity in risk-reward relationships between landlord and tenant and closer partnerships. So there's huge opportunity there, but there's going to need to be more sophisticated analytics so landlords understand, okay, I'll take on some risk here, but what am I going to get back on the other side? What's the potential for this tenant in this property at this time in this on this plan? So we need to get better around that. And public-private sector needs to work better together. Businesses will need to work better together. And we need to accelerate the process of change on the high street. We can't live in the old. We need to adapt high streets to meet the realities of today and make it flexible enough to meet the realities of tomorrow. And that means a number of things. How do we use a space from day to night more intelligently? How do we change use class more intelligently? How do we build dynamism into the high street? I mean, pop-ups is a good example of, you know, that ability to, you know, bring in new, fresh offers to a high street. We can see that working. But how do we change the economics of actually bringing in a tenant every 3 months or 6 months or 1 year? You know, how do we get to a world where we don't need to rely on 5 year plus upward only rent reviews for retail to stay sexy? Yeah, so we're in a world that's a new world, and it was already becoming a new world. And what's happened here is an accelerator towards it. And a lot of what we're focused on doing is, like I said, trying to make retail sexy again from a property investment asset class and finding those opportunities in this crisis. Because, you know, as Ranjan pointed out, there's going to be a lot of new stock on the market. There's going to be a lot of feeling and intention at local authority level and at central government level to invest to create the conditions for high streets to succeed. And for those that are opportunistic, for those that have access to the right information, for those that make the right bets, the upside potential in retail should dwarf other asset class. But we need to create the conditions so that in the investor community are comfortable putting their money into speed that process up, to liquidate, to grease that process, to grease the wheels, if you like, on the next iteration of retail property.
So, Alex, thank you very much for those comprehensive answers. Susie, I'm coming to you, and there's been a slight modification as we've gone through on this. We are looking at the state of play, but Alex has spoken about a few things, which I'm going to ask you to wear a couple of hats in your current role. And actually, if you were in your previous role, how would you be taking it forward? So I'm going to come to you, Susie, and I'm also going to get you to kick off the next round where we start to actually bring this down on a more micro level. And as I go through the panelists, we want to say, okay, there's a lot of people on the call. We've got over 50 people in. As an investor, what should we be doing next? Is it a time to get into retail? Is it a time to start to convert some of the things that we have? Is it time to change our tenant type? Is it time to look at you know, stress testing our assets and seeing where they'll best be put in? So Susie, no pressure, but please, can I just have your comment on what's been said so far and anything else you have to add? So Susie?
Yeah, right, where do I start? So I totally echo what Alex said in that I think we're seeing 2030 and 2020 in retail because of COVID-19. I think it was Lenin that said, there's some decades we see nothing happen, and then some weeks we see decades happening, and that's exactly what's happened in retail. So it's literally just accelerating what was going on already. And I would suspect that behind the closed doors in every retailer now, there'll be strategy discussions about rationalization of store portfolios. We're kind of seeing that coming out already. So there'll be a lot of closures. High streets are going to shrink for sure. I think that, you know, we already knew there was a lot far too much retail on high street, so it's going to shrink. And then it's about visioning, it's working, private, public sector working together to kind of work out what the kind of new town centres look like. I think in terms of opportunity, my feeling is, and having been in the kind of corporate world, I know how valuers work, and what they don't like doing is they don't like doing big slashes to values. So valuers have known that retail's been struggling for some time, but it's been like death by a thousand cuts. It's just been, you know, incremental reductions in values every quarter. And actually, what we're gonna see now is a reason for values to be reduced. What that will mean is more opportunities for development on high streets. And obviously, you need to kind of work out what that looks like, but it's definitely kind of more opportunity. In terms of rents, I don't think we know kind of how long this is going to go on for retailers. You know, everyone's going to be opening up soon, but you know, how will the customer be feeling about getting back on the high street? So we've just literally reached the tip of the iceberg in terms of tenant failures, administration, CVA, but you know, it's all going to come. And I think that personally, kind of given my background and the way that I've seen it best to work with retailers, I totally hear what Dranjan says. I think he's taking absolutely the right approach for his portfolio, but for a lot of people's portfolio, going to need to work in partnership with your tenants. Otherwise, you're going to have kind of widespread voids. So there's a little piece around kind of partnership working there. I think that a lot of retailers will now be accelerating their kind of online presence. So stores that have never had it will be working out how they can integrate their kind of clicks and mortar, it's called, you know, a bit of a trite kind of word for it, but how you can kind of merge the two. And I think that interestingly, kind of local high streets will kind of move to kind of local service-led type uses, convenience type uses. And it'll be the big town centres, the big shopping centres, where there's going to be a big question mark over kind of the role. And personally, I kind of see a place where our high streets, I mean, I've always said that secondary high streets are the best development opportunities, but values need to drop massively. And I think that kind of now reaches out to a lot of secondary retail, you know, alternative uses. It just needs a lot of relaxation of planning law. And I think the government are going to probably do it, even if it's only temporary. I think that will happen. So, and then just quickly touching what Alex said about turnover rents, there's definitely going to be turnover rents, which is basically a partnership between landlord and tenants. And kind of put my old hat on and my landlord hat on, I can see that there's going to be now a kind of difference in value between the new turnover rents and the old kind of traditional kind of open market rent type model. And I think that is going to almost create a two-tier high street. And once people get, investors get more used to turnover rent, that will probably reduce. But I think there's going to be like the old rent, old leases, new leases. And that will, you know, that will create problems for some people.
Okay, so Susie, so thank you so much for that. Touching on turnover rents, we did have a question from Paul Pinder, who actually asked the question, is a 20% turnover enough to share between the landlord and tenant? So Susie, do you want to start with that?
Yeah, so turnover rents is a really complex area, because the problem with from a landlord's point of view with a turnover rent is that, you know, our online sales included in the stores, you know, like click and collect, they're not quite often not included in the store's turnover. And yet when that customer comes in, they tend to buy, you know, John Lewis have kind of proven that. So actually kind of calculating turnover rents to begin with is really tricky. And then you can have turnover top-up rents, which is where basically the tenant pays like a base rent and there's like a turnover instead of top-up on top of that, where it's maybe 20% or 30% or whatever it might be. And then you have total turnover leases. And I don't think there's one rule fits all for that. I think you very much have to look at, and as Alex said, I think there's going to be a lot more stats around this, there's going to be a lot more openness of accounts, because you have to work out where that turnover be, and you have to see some pretty accurate projections as a landlord. Otherwise, you're just not going to do it. You're just not going to share in that risk. So I think the answer is it 20%? I think the answer is, as always it is in these cases, it kind of depends on the type of unit, type of retailer. You really do need to kind of drill into the detail on that.
So thanks for that, Susie. So on an interesting point, I'm going to get Ranjan to comment on it next, and then I'm going to have Peter, who's going to be speaking about what planning support and what he's hearing, you know, in the background in the planning world about what the government's going to extend, what they might actually change. And then I will get Karen to comment and Alex to sort of round that bit up before we go into the last period, when we're actually going to ask people to future gaze crystal ball time. So Ranjan, please, what's your comment on some of the comments
I echo all the concerns that Susie just brought up with turnover rents. I won't repeat any of those because I agree with them all. I'll just add to it a landlord's perspective, because there are all sorts of different reasons different classes of landlords get into commercial property. And there's a huge bank of people who do it for surety of income, particularly the pension funds and all of that, who are less inclined to really want to get involved in the turnover aspect and the risk aspect of the trading business, because that's why they're just owning the asset. And then the confusion of actually figuring out what the turnover is, is just another sort of layer of complexity. When we get out of this lockdown, what we will see is some kind of recovery budget. There usually will be. And in the aftermath of the 2009 thing, there were many things in various recovery budgets which were property focused to encourage property activity. A common thing is the reduction of SDLT for commercial properties, and or the raising of threshold limits for a certain period of time. This happened in 2009. Donald Trump has announced the equivalent of that in the US. So as some sort of recovery budget, I'd expect to see some kind of SDLT for commercial property easing to encourage that. And I see a fast forwarding of a whole bunch of permitted developments allowing, one of the other panelists mentioned earlier in their comments about A1, there are many high streets where there's a there's this thing about where they want to preserve the number of A1 retail units on the high street. And a classic loophole has been that A2 units have not been included in the A1 number. So it's much easier to repurpose A2 units, such as betting shops, former banks and stuff like that, than it sometimes has been to do A1 units. But I would see a easing of what you can do under permitted development, including the actual knockdown of some commercial buildings for repurposing as part of some kind of recovery budget, which we're going to see. We always see some kind of recovery measures, and they always include something to do with property, because property is one of the easiest ways of kickstarting economic activities and leading to all the supply chain and all of that. So I think that's guaranteed we're going to see it. How much and what we're going to see, who knows?
Fantastic, Ranjan. And I, there are a couple of things. I know Peter's ears pricked up, especially when you're talking about A1 and A2 and what you're expecting to see moving forward. So Peter, based on what you've heard, where do you think we're going with this, and what opportunities are actually out there for people that are looking at the high street? Where do you think this is all going?
I mean, at the moment, the same things still apply under permitted development. So you can still do up to 2 flats above a retail unit, specifically without planning permission, without restriction in terms of conservation areas. You don't even have to submit any prior approvals. You can't do any external changes. You would need planning permission for that. There is the prior approval, which a lot of people will know. It's Class M. It's up to 150 square meters, change of use into residential, but you can't do it in conservation areas. I mean, to be honest, I've done a lot of these schemes. They're best used as the first stage to secure the principal and then do something that's actually decent, because most of the quality that comes from them, from my experience and what I've seen, predominantly in London, is pretty poor. And in any way, prior approvals still have that hurdle of a kind of planning process, insofar as the council still seek to restrict the loss of A1, even where there is no A1 at the moment. Or A2, the planning policy just hasn't responded well to this. I mean, we've actively sought to introduce a lot of community uses in high streets. They've been proven to generate footfall, then provide complementary spending. It can actually support a high street, but the constant resistance to loss of this A1 unit is really hampering the high street. I think there's at the back end of last year, there were some changes to PD for different commercial uses. So there's a flexible use you can do that's now up to 3 years. So you can kind of hop between A1, A2, A3 and A5. You can also go to B1 and some D1 uses, but that's pretty much exclusively medical now. So they actually allowed it to 3 years, but then changed the uses within D1 you could do. So you can't do a nursery and such other things. You can change to B1 up to 500 square metres under a new class JA, but you still have to get prior approval. So the council can still say, oh, there's not enough retail, which is frustrating. I think in terms of what's going to happen, and it's interesting pointing out the last financial crisis, that's where office to resi came from. Absolute explosion. It's been one of the biggest delivery of housing in this country, rightly or wrongly, because there's still a lot of rubbish out there. I think it's generally better office to resi conversions than there are the retail conversions. say for the upward six, the flats upstairs. I think Steve Quartermain, who was the chief planner for about 10 years at government, left in April, probably a timely departure for him, given what's likely to happen. And on leaving, he said this government is absolutely obsessed with permitted development. That's the way they see it. It's a Tory government wants to literally strip out red tape. So I think PD will explode, but the government have been talking about upwards extensions for up to two stories for years. And I think the reason they haven't been able to do it is because they don't know how to write it. I mean, how on earth do you legislate for that without making it awful? But I think this will be the tipping point that they'll probably chuck it in, and it might be awful, but there could be opportunities to add additional stories in form of airspace development. They've also talked about whether you can knock down commercial buildings. Again, difficult to legislate for, difficult to write. I think what may happen, though, is they may do a wave of PD changes, but I think there's a pressure to apply a quality of accommodation caveat and condition on these applications. So we've got the national prescribed standards. Ben pointed out earlier in his presentation about these minimum standards that you get, which don't apply to permitted development schemes. I think they may introduce those, so you have to do a minimum, you know, a minimum size of flat, a minimum size of, you know, bedrooms. There's certainly a lot of pressure because there's been some pretty poor quality units. And as people have been locked down, they've been stuck in these 15 square meter flats. It's
not you, Ranjan.
Not you, no.
I didn't realise I was on.
There are some really poor cases of PD conversions. And most of the time we're using it as a strategy to secure the principal loss, and then we do something that's better. And ultimately better means higher, you know, rental values, higher values. It's predominantly focused in London where the real, you know, poor quality is. I think where you're in other areas, you have to actually provide something of a higher standard in order to achieve those rental returns. So it's not be all and end all. I think there will be more PD changes. The thing is, though, I don't think that's going to save the high street. I think it's just going to be tinkering around the edges. It's the stuff that Susie and Alex talked about. It's those big structural changes that are needed. It's those big questions of what is the high street for? Is it a place that people go and shop? No, people shop online now. People go to a cafe, or they hope to go to a cafe and shop online. They go to pick up their stuff. They get it delivered. The retail is changing significantly. And I think we have to understand what is the point of the high street? What is the point of these centres? And fundamentally for me, it's a place where people go. People go and meet, hopefully at some point, people can go and meet people. Wouldn't that be lovely? And actually kind of congregate. So community uses. We should be seeing more education in town centres. We should be seeing more intergenerational housing, these higher quality developments, probably on the periphery of the core high street. That's I think what the future will be. Whether we get there, I suspect not. I suspect we'll have another class of PD that brings in more changes. But
fantastic, Peter. Peter, I just want to acknowledge you for going through a few issues. And I see that you have interacted with the planning system. So please don't let it steal all your joy away. You're there to change it again. So before we come on to Alex, who was almost virtually licking his lips at some of the topics that were raised. Now, Karen, you have the hottest baby here is, with all these changes and the model of finance, how do we deal with you know, the changing ways in which landlords and tenants are interacting, looking at turnover rents, looking at, you know, security of tenure? How are you going to be funding these hybrids?
Yeah, I mean, the turnover rent piece is an interesting one because essentially any lender or any funder would look at that as a trading business. So they're going to want to see the accounts. You're going to have to show 2-3 years accounts to show that affordability. So that would make it slightly more challenging on a borrowing sense than just working purely off of the rental income. But again, if you're choosing to go down that model, that's because you feel confidence in that business's strength. But it is worth looking at that and considering that when you're looking at turnover rents, because the funding would be, there are a few more hoops for you to jump through with regards to that. Generally, in terms of the funding, I mean, essentially, all a lender is looking at is the viability of that business. So all of the comments that everybody has made today is what we would take into account. So we would just be considering, does that business have longevity? What plans do they have in place? Some of the points that Ranjan made around, you know, properties held and that can be repurposed, that's very interesting because it shows that there's already a plan there. So if it was a case that there's any challenge with any of their tenants, they've got other options that can mean that that security is still viable for them. So it'd be very much a case of working with the customers and kind of seeing what they intend to do, looking at what their longer term views are and, you know, what flexibility they have with those views. We have just started to see, actually, interestingly, I'm not sure whether it will take off because of the size of some of the retail units, but where you've seen serviced offices become quite a popular thing over the last few years, we have started to see the theory of serviced shops where people pull together and you have two or three businesses trading from the same premises and perhaps selling services that suit one another. But with that, you can then therefore limit down your costs because you're only paying, let's say, a third of all of the costs involved in having that shop front. So that's quite interesting and something that will be challenging to underwrite in terms of the viability. But actually, again, it then just comes down to, well, what rent is paid? And then actually, does that make the business more viable, the fact that they've got multiple products that they're selling within it? Quite possibly. So again, it's just trying to have that broadness. The honest answer is it's not figured out yet because we don't know how much it's going to change. As Peter said, you know, what could be done could be fantastic, but equally, if it's just a change to permitted development rights, then it's just about getting under the skin of that and making sure what they're turning it into is also plausible. Because just to make a decision to turn it into residential, if the units are too small, they're not necessarily going to be saleable. Is it in the right area? Does that local high street actually want more residential units within it? Is the demand there? Does it suit the characteristics of that town, that city, and the people that live there? So I think all of the things that everyone's discussed affect impact on every single part of it. But yeah, there definitely will always be an appetite from a funding perspective to support good businesses. It's just about trying to prove that you are a good business and you can trade through whatever period of time you're borrowing that money for.
So Karen, thank you so much for answering that question. There is just one thing else. What about for the landlords? Because our covenants still covenants in this changing world. And, you know, that's, I suppose, in the same category. So Karen, do you have any view on the landlords?
Loans that they've got in place, essentially, yes, they are still in place, but the majority of lenders will try and work with their clients. So you may well have some covenants in there that say you have to keep your loan at 75% loan to value, for example. You know, in a declining market, it doesn't make sense for a lender to call in on every single one of those and accept a loss on every single one of those. So it'll be very much in the lender's position to be able to work with the client to try and find a solution together. My view would be, from a landlord's perspective, is it's speaking to your lender as soon as possible. So not waiting until you're getting into challenge, but speaking to them earlier, seeing what they do have available. The point was made earlier that there hasn't been a lot of support given to landlords, and I believe that to be true. However, quite a lot of lenders have chosen to offer the mortgage holidays, the payment holidays to commercial security as well as residential, because of the fact that they see them, everybody, as a customer, and they feel like if it can be applied to a residential flat, why couldn't it be applied to a retail unit? So you are seeing lenders be broader minded than you might think initially. My honest view would be to just have a conversation. And just pick up the phone and chat to them, and they, you know, try and do it that you're working through this challenge together, and you're more likely to have a much better outcome with that than the kind of ostrich approach.
You know, I just want to say thank you very much, Karen. It was a very hot, sweet seat. I was even sweating having you answer those questions. So obviously, these are all conversations that are coming. So, Alex, is Alex still here with the call?
Yeah, I'm here. Do you mind if I just dovetail the future stuff into this?
Absolutely. I've got to jump. So this is it. So we're going to do a 1 minute speed round. You know, we do have to move on from about 11:30. So Alex, if you just quickly dovetail the future, and then I will just quickly go back through the panelists.
Okay, look, I'll start by just building on the stuff around turnover rents here for a future. So the first thing is the future of turnover rents probably aren't just about turnover. We've got to look at the true contribution of store to value. So if you've got a physical premise, a physical space, you know, a lot of the time, if you're the operator, it's not just about the amount of turnover you generate in the store. Regardless of how you've negotiated in or out click and collect and delivery and certain other attributes around turnover, there's a great brand value. You get a lot of customer interaction that you build a lot of value from. We need to start to understand what's the value of each physical store, you know, and what contribution that's providing. And when we look at the future of turnover rents, I prefer we start to think about them as performance rents, you know, where we start to really understand, you know, how high performing is this particular space for this particular tenant? What value are they getting? And how does the landlord and tenant share in that value? So that's, I think, the first thing there. Second thing, just building on that, lots more data and analytics required. We, as you know, Aaron, we've been building a lot of work into this space over the last year, really looking at how do we, particularly with the independent businesses, give the landlord complete transparency as a middleman between the landlord and tenant, but then also start to forecast what should a particular tenant likely to achieve in a particular space at a particular time. And third thing I'll just build on, so I've heard covenant strength and that discussion, which are a really, really interesting space. Listen, the future of the high street is there's going to be less physical retail space. There's going to be less than 500, 600,000 outlets, which is what it looks like today. I don't disagree with that. But I also think the proportion of those spaces, the proportion of businesses in those spaces is going to be increasingly independent. Today it's about 55% of high street outlets are independently owned. So 45% are within the multiples. The multiples leave, BHS leaves the high street. It's not replaced by another BHS. We need to empower the sort of next generation of high street entrepreneurs to come onto the high street. Every year, 14% odd small high street businesses die. 14% odd small high street businesses come. The birth rate and the death rate are quite high for both of them. Problem we've got is there's multiples leaving the high street, so we need to get lots more independents onto the high street. So we need to create an environment that businesses want to come onto this space, into these spaces. So there's going to be, I think, a lot of the talk around what sort of service spaces, service shops. I think these are really interesting, and we've been exploring this. If anyone else is looking to understand a little bit more about this, do reach out to us. Speak to a few entrepreneurs who are doing interesting things about taking some of these old units that used to be a VHS or used to be a Poundland, and then how do we turn this into a completely new envisioned space? Indoor markets, you know, mixes of different use classes. We can support around some of these things. We can help guide it. We can help drive it. You know, so there's lots of really interesting thinking already going on, and maybe this community can help power that further around how do we use these empty, vacant units that are there today and will increasingly be there over the coming months for entirely new new visions for that, what that space might be. So yeah, if anybody needs to reach out to me, because I've got to get off, I'll put my details into the group chat so you can kind of reach out. If you've got any tenants, we've launched a campaign last week. If you've got any tenants that you're working with at the moment, we launched something called the High Street Recovery and Resilience Campaign, which is a whole package of free support for independent tenants, which is maybe a nice thing to pass on to people. If you go onto the safethehighstreet.org homepage, you'll see more information about it. There's a link to say get free report. And if you pass that link on to the tenants, anyone can receive that. And if you're interested in anything to do with investing in the future of high streets, yeah, feel free to drop me a line at alex@safethehighstreet.org or just go on to safethehighstreet.org and join the movement.
Thank you so much, Alex. So just really, really grateful for your contribution. Please go to SaveTheHighStreet.org. Now for the rest of the panelists, you have about 45 seconds. What we're doing is we're crystal gazing on just your comment as to the future, what next, all of the important information that we want people to hear. So the first person I'm going to go to is Susie, then I'm going to go to Peter, then I'm going to go to Karen, then I'm going to have Ranjan take us away if Brendan hasn't kicked us out by then. So let's go. So Susie, just quick, 30 seconds. Or 40, just tell us what's next, or what do you think we need to hear next?
So values haven't reached their bottom yet. So let's kind of see where the balls lie in terms of values. But I can see there being a stack of opportunity for PD, alternative uses. But check your covenants, like really important. Check your covenants and just make sure that you know who you're taking on and you know, and as Karen said, you know, make sure you get funding on that basis as well.
Fantastic, thank you very much. So next is Peter.
Hi, crystal ball gazing. I don't think very few planning authorities will change their ways. I think some will be progressive and recognise this is an opportunity for them to really reinvent their spaces. PD, I think airspace will be the hot topic. I think that'll come out. So anyone that's got assets where there's potential to add stories, probably think about keeping hold of them. I think there could be opportunities to add a couple of stories on top very soon.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for that, Peter. And then we will have Karen.
Yeah, I think there is great opportunity with regards to the conversion piece and converting over to residential and repurposing that commercial security where it's part and part. I think there is great opportunity there. I agree with Peter around the airspace. You are starting to see quite a few people buy up sites that you're kind of questioning why they're doing it. And when you're discussing it with them, that's because they're looking down the road 3 years ahead and seeing that as a great opportunity. So I do think that that is something you're seeing. And then I just think in terms of if you own retail or if you're looking to buy retail, because I do agree there's going to be some good opportunities, you really need to think about your kind of what process you go through in choosing what tenants come in and perhaps looking a little bit deeper, doing a bit more of a kind of dig into what their business is, what they're planning to do, how they have traded through COVID, how has their business adapted post it, just so you can understand and you can kind of make your own personal call on how feasible that business is in the longer, short to medium term.
Okay, so thank you very much. The panel's coming to the close. Ranjan, you've got about a minute, which is probably the hardest thing that's happened on this panel. So please summarize and take us forward before we go into the breakout rooms. Ranjan, you're muted.
Retail is pretty much split between two different camps. There's the large sort of high street with all the multiple names, and that's got the turnover rent challenges and probably excessive rent challenges. And the landlords tend to be larger. They tend to be pension funds and large companies and all the rest of it. But there's the secondary parade type of opportunity, which is more appealing to the smaller property investor, smaller developer, or the residential property developer looking to branch out. And that's where I think there is great opportunity sort of going forward, because there's massive excess stock. It's maybe difficult to convert all of a retail unit into residential space, but one way of addressing that is to keep a much smaller retail unit at the front and make a flat to the rear of the retail unit, thereby not losing a retail unit of space, if you like, in that because most council's plans say loss of a unit. They don't talk about loss of square footage of A1 retail space. So that's an interesting little workaround. But I think the opportunities for the smaller developers and investors and residential people who want to move forward is to look at secondary parades and also these tertiary parades where there's just three or four shops in a little parade with very little footfall. Those sort of parades will see total conversion to residential use. It's going to be a lot easier to do so. And strangely enough, in previous recessions, there's a massive challenge in renting very expensive shops out. But when I make a flat at the back and I reduce the size of a shop and I make a very small shop in a secondary parade, in a recession, there are lots of people looking to set up small businesses. And those units seem to rent very, very quickly and very, very easily because they don't have business rates to pay because they're under the small rates threshold. So conversely, secondary parades can be very good to repurpose to residential partially because those that will produce very good yields, much more yields than buying residential property. And the retail units that you end up with, the smaller ones, are actually very easy to let out to starter businesses. So there's plenty of opportunity if the sort of smaller developer just knows where to look.
Fantastic, Ranjan. So thank you so much for that. I just want to say thank you to all the panelists. It's been very, very, very rich.
Oh, I just shoved my... I've got a video on five golden rules for finding retail property on secondary parade. So I've just put a link.